तेषां नित्यादयत्वानां योगक्षेमं Those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. You translating at the end? Or?
No, there's no need to.
But those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. We're reading this evening from the 9th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Herein, Krishna is explaining the nature of a devotee who exclusively concentrates all of his consciousness upon properly worshipping the Supreme Lord. To such a devotee, he has nothing to fear. He has nothing to doubt. Here on this great battlefield of Kurukshetra Dham, Arjuna is looking across the battlefield. His chariot is stationed by Lord Shri Krishna. At Jyoti's side. He was seeing in both directions. On either side of the armies, there were wishers, friends, relatives. It was very difficult for him. Be willing to surrender by this war. But because he was Ananya, he was exclusively surrendered to Lord Shri Krishna. For the pleasure of the Lord, he was willing to fight this war. But after he made a decision, the odds were terribly against him. The Kurus had 11 Akshayana divisions of soldiers, and the Pandavas only 7. And the most powerful warriors in the battlefield were on the side of the Kurus. Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that you should not consider the odds against you. All you should consider is just trying to please you. Just trying to perform your duty as an offering of love and service. That need be your only concentration. It is a fact that on the battlefield of life, when we want to take to a true spiritual path, when we want to dedicate our lives in the service of the Lord for the purpose of self-realization, all odds will be against us in this age of Kali Yuga. In fact, the whole society will oppose you. The propaganda of the world will
taught you.
And as Arjuna, sometimes even your own relatives, your loved ones, your teachers and friends, who you feel so indebted and grateful to, they will be standing up ready to fight and oppose what you believe. Not only may this happen, it will happen if you are truly taken in battle time. Of course, if we take to Kaitavapada, a compromised form of religion, you may face practically no opposition, because no one is threatened by your so-called religious principles. Why? Because basically you are living a material life just like them, with just an added feature of some ritual or some puja or some faith. But when you actually attempt to follow the teachings of Gita, then you actually declare war against material energy. Arjuna had to declare a war to follow Krishna's teachings. Bhagavad Gita is not a scripture in which people sit in the university and study and chant so many wonderful slokas through memory and discuss all the different technicalities of the philosophy of the Gita. That may be a preliminary stage of understanding Gita. But to actually follow Gita means you have to follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, which means to declare war against ignorance, material attachment, and the whole society that represents this. How many people are willing to do that? But if you want to achieve the goal of life, if you want to transcend the repetition of birth and death, if you want to realize your everlasting relationship with the Supreme, you have no alternative. You must. Bahunam Jamanamande Janakamukamadite Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatmasukunavaha. After many births and deaths of following various religious principles, when one finally comes to the platform of knowledge, Krishna says he surrenders to me, knowing that I am the cause of all causes, and I am all it is. Manushyanam sahasreshu kashchit yatati shivahe yatatam api shivhanam kashchit manu devi hatvada. Out of thousands amongst men, Krishna says, hardly one seriously endeavors to achieve it. And out of such exalted and rare souls, hardly one knows me or truth. Krishna is not trying to impel a feeling of hopelessness within us. But what he's trying to do, and he's speaking this verse, is to inspire and enthuse how rare and precious it is. And we have the opportunity to seek perfection in life. Are we willing to do that? If we are Krishna's, even if the whole world is against you, Krishna says, I will protect you. You have it. What you lack
I will take it upon myself to carry you. And what you have, I will preserve.
And of course we know how despite so many impediments on this battle, Krishna somehow or other arranged Arjuna to be victorious. Although at times it appeared that he would be utterly defeated, that he would be lost, Krishna sometimes allows his devotees to be put in such predicaments. Because in that predicament, the devotee realizes he is powerless without the help of God. And the fact is that that is our eternal constitutional position. The Upanishads say, Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Ekolahunam Yoga Vidati Bhanam. That there is one supreme eternal. And there are innumerable eternals. The one supreme eternal is Bhagavan. And the innumerable eternal are the jivatmas, are living beings. And these living beings are always subordinate to that one supreme being of Krishna. We are eternally subordinate to Krishna. We are eternally helpless without the grace of God. In this world, we are so covered over by forgetfulness and ungratefulness that we forget that our existence is exclusively depending on the gifts of God. We cannot live a moment by our own endeavor, without his help. We may have evolved into great strides of progress in science and technology, but have we created the sun? Can we create the rain? Can we even create one seed to grow foodstuffs? Can we create the earth in which those seeds grow? Can we create any of the components of our body? We may make some artificial replacements, but even those artificial replacements are coming from the natural resources created by God. Can we create the air to breathe? We can pollute it. In this way, every breath, every heartbeat of our life, we are depending exclusively. We are eternally dependent on this. And the Shastras explain, even in the liberated condition, we are still eternally subordinate to the mercy of the love of God. So in this way, why should we be so foolish? Why should we be in such an illusion? To think that we are the doers of our activities. Krishna says in Gita, Ahamkara Vimutata Karataham. That a bewildered soul thinks himself to do or be the doer of activities. But in actuality, they are being carried out by nature.
My Advaita Chaitanya Prabhupada is Sudha Desai Raja.
And Krishna is orchestrating all the affairs of nature. This is the essence of Gita. To humbly surrender to the supreme source of our existence and admit that we are eternally meant to be forgiven by His service.
This beautiful verse explains that for such a devotee who has such exclusive concentration on Him, who is always engaged in the proper process of worshiping Him, who is fixed in devotion, yoga kshemam bhavanya, I will provide all of His requirements. In this regard, there's a very beautiful story of a Brahmin. This Brahmin was a very humble and very sincere devotee of the Lord. He was a great scholar. He studied all the Vedas, the Upanishads, but he was especially enlightened upon his reading of the Sri Bhagavad Gita. This Brahmin, he would never accept any employment, because traditionally a Brahmin is not allowed to accept employment. He must simply live a proper standard and just beg in a very simple way. Whatever comes in his own accord, he accepts. So he would immerse his whole life in worshiping the Lord, studying the scriptures, and chanting the holy names. And every day in the afternoon, when everyone else was eating their food, he would go out for 1 hour to beg. And whatever he would collect, whatever ingredients, he would bring home, he would give to his wife would prepare it. They would eat one meagerly meal a day, and the rest of the day together, the husband and wife, were engaged in serving the Lord. Such a simple and pure life. One day this Brahmin happened to be reading Bhagavad Gita, and he read it really, very deeply, trying to comprehend and follow the essence of what was being said. And it came out this verse that we are reading today. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana param vashate esham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam bhavanyah. That such a devotee who worships me, always fixed in devotion, who concentrates on no one else except me, Krishna says, yogakshemam bhavanyah. I will carry what he lacked and preserve what he has. And Rami was thinking, how is this possible? Krishna is saying that he will personally provide for his devotees. Over 70 years old. I'm an old man. And I've been Krishna's devotee my whole life. I've given up everything of the world to exclusively engage in His loving service. And what did we have in this house? Perhaps what Krishna is saying is He provides through someone else. Maybe some wealthy man will give you something, Krishna will do it through him. Or maybe when Krishna favors you, a great king, he will supply whatever you need. But Krishna, to take the burden upon himself, impossible. I have read about the Supreme Lord Krishna, how he arranged such a beautiful palace for Sudama Vigraha while he was living in Dwarka. But Krishna didn't personally take the burden upon himself.
He just worked through material nature to arrange a beautiful palace. I don't believe this verse. In fact, I don't even believe Krishna spoke it. I believe somebody else has meddled with the Gita and placed this verse within it. So he took his red pen and he crossed out this verse. And then he told his wife, "I'm going out to bed." But they were so poor. His wife only had one old piece of cloth. And he didn't even have that much. He had to take his wife's cloth and tear half of it so that he could put something on his own body. And then he went out. And he went out begging. And everywhere he went that day, no one would give him anything. Everyone had some excuse. But it was nothing to give. He was becoming really much anxious. It was already 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he hadn't even collected one grain of rice. While he was out, a beautiful young boy, about 13, 14 years old, who had a wonderful bluish complexion and a yellow dhoti. He came walking to this Brahmin's house. On his shoulder there was a stick, and on one side of the stick there was pots holding rice and dal and wheat flour, and on the other side of the stick, which was on his balancing on his shoulder, were vegetables and ghee and sugar and other ingredients. And it was very heavy. It was so heavy that this very, very delicate young boy was straining and struggling to carry it, and he was perspiring like anything. And he came to the door and he knocked. And the wife of the Brahmin asked, "Who is this?" He said, you are my guru's wife? You are Guru Mata? My Guru Dev has sent me?" She said, "What is this nonsense? My husband has no disciples." He said, "No, I am his disciple." But the boy understood that the woman had not even enough clothes to open the door. So he took off his amuchandra and he gave it to her. And she put it on and she opened the door. She saw this beautiful young boy who was perspiring, was carrying this huge, heavy load of foodstuffs. He said, "Your husband, my Gurudev, he forcibly put this big load on my shoulder. And I asked him, 'But this is such a heavy load, how do you expect me to carry it?' He said, 'You must carry it, and you must bring it to my home.'" "Oh, but I'm very thirsty. Can I drink a little water before I carry this load?"
"No, don't drink water. You carry this home."
The wife of the Brahmin, she was thinking, "What kind of nonsense person is my husband? Why is he so cruel to you? He's supposed, what a faker. He presents himself as a Brahmin, so humble, so simple, so compassionate, but he can't even be merciful and kind to a young, gentle child like you." And then the boy said, "And before I left, after he put this big burden on my shoulder, let me show you what he did to me." And the boy turned around, and there were red scratch marks on his back. He said, "Your husband scratched me." The Brahmin's wife, she began to weep, crying at the injustice that was put upon this little boy, the abuse. She
put him on her lap. She began to weep. We tried to gently, tried to pacify the scratches on his back. And she said, "You must be very hungry. Let me cook for you." So she went into the kitchen and she began to cook. At that time, who's there?
"It's me, your husband."
She came, she saw him. He was out begging all day. No one gave him anything. She said, "You have empty hands." He said, "Yes, no one gave me anything." "What nonsense! You put such a big load of all dal and rice and ghee and sabji and sugar and everything on this little boy, and you're carrying nothing yourself? You're a grown man." "So what are you talking about? And besides that, you wouldn't even give him any water, and you scratched him?" "What are you talking about? I don't know what. I do know what I'm talking about. Why you are so cruel? Why are you so merciless?" "What boy? The boy in the next room. He's waiting for prasad. He's hungry." I said, "Show me this boy." He went into the next room, and the little boy was gone. As his wife was chastising him for putting such a big burden for this little child to personally carry, he wanted to take shelter of Bhagavad Gita. So he opened the Bhagavad Gita and he saw. He saw that this verse, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam, Yejana Pariupasate, Tesham Nityavayoktana, Yogakshayam Bhavam. That where he scratched it out in red just before he left, all those red ink marks were no longer there. The verse was perfectly written. And he understood that actually Krishna does personally carry the burden of his devotee. This is the faith that we must have to properly understand Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not just a book of philosophical view. Bhagavad Gita is a way of life by which devotees have complete faith in the personal intervention of Krishna in their lives. This Brahman began to cry. He began to weep. Because the words of the Gita are none different than Krishna. When he scratched the words of Krishna, he was actually scratching the body of the Supreme Personality of God. We must understand that these words are Shabda Brahma. Krishna is absolute. There is no difference between the word of Krishna and Krishna. So in this way, we approach these beautiful teachings of the Gita. Understanding that bhakti, or devotion, which includes jnana and karma, is a personal relationship between the jivatma and the karma. Sarva dharma parityajya nami kanchana. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha. How do we surrender to the personality of Krishna? She explains by understanding everything, by becoming his devotee, by worshipping him, offering homage to him,
way, Krishna promises that you will come to me without fail. And how to always think of Krishna. How to purify our consciousness through this process, and thus extend what we have learned to Gita to every single aspect of our lives. You see, the Vaishnava charges, they have taught us that first you offer your life to Krishna, and then automatically everything you do will be offered. This is what Krishna is teaching. How to make our very life, our mind, our body, our words, to offer to Krishna. And whether we are professors, or whether we are housewives, or whether we are doctors or lawyers, or whether we are brahmacharis or sannyasis, it is not really important. What is important is we learn how to offer our lives and all of our occupational responsibilities in the consciousness of service to Krishna. That is the simple teaching. And to invoke that awareness, there are three things that are most essential. One is the satsanga sadhana. We cannot live the Gita unless we have association of sincere devotees to teach us. Two is we must regularly, according to the guidance of such highly realized sadhus, we must study the Bhagavad Gita. And three, we must regularly bathe our consciousness in the sweet remembrance of Krishna by chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
And if we simply follow these three principles, then naturally, every part of our life becomes a natural offering of love to God. And that is the perfection. And by simply endeavoring in this way, we can, by the grace of God, overcome all obstacles. We can transcend all opposition. We can cross over and if we achieve in this very life, in the same position we are in today, we can achieve shelter at the eternal shore of Krishna's abode. The abode of salvation and pure, unmotivated, uninterrupted love. Thank you very much. Any questions? Because in the Gita, Krishna explains, Chatur-vāna-nayas-kṛṣṇa-bhūna-kāna-bhūna-bhāna-bhāna-bhāna-bhāna-bhāna-bhāna. He says that I have created these four varnas and four ashrams because in order for society to harmoniously progress in spiritual realization, there is a need. There is a need for brahmacharis. There is a need for vinyasas. There is a need for vanaprasthas and sannyasis. There is also a need for brahmins and kshatriyas and vaishyas and shudras. Unless these four dharmas and four ashrams are being properly followed, human society will become spiritually deficient. It is true that Krishna was Grihastha at the time of speaking Gita. In fact, he had 16,108 wives. But he was a responsible Grihastha. Every wife was fully satisfied. And Arjuna also had several wives. In those days, that was the Vedic culture of Kshatriyas. But at the same time, we find how Arjuna and Krishna both, when someone like Narada Rishi would come before them, who was a great sannyasi, renunciate, they would bow down, they would wash his feet, serve him, with great submission, humility, beautifully. You see, it is a necessity that there be spiritual directors in society who have no worldly responsibilities. But they do not renounce everything for their own salvation. They renounce everything of this world so they can soon serve the whole human society with all their energy. The fact is, in the Grihastha ashram, you have to spend practically your whole life just providing for a family of maybe 5 or 6 people. Isn't that true? How much time do you have to spend doing other things? Housewife, if she has 3 or 4 children, a mother's work is never done. And that is what they need to God. And if she neglects her children for some other profession, that is not God. And the husband, he has to work, he has to provide. It takes a lot of time. So such people, generally, they can have their own strict spiritual practice in their own household life. They can be charitable towards sadhus. But who is it that actually has the time to give their whole lives simply to serving human society? It is those who have given up the luxuries and the pleasures of their own family. So you have to understand that the path of renunciation and the path of Grihastha ashram, they are meant to work hand in hand and complement one another. There is an absolute need for both. And this is what Krishna has taught by the words of the Gita, and he has taught it by his own example. Grihastha life means that our whole family is centered around service to Krishna, service to God. If our family is centered around any other principle than God, then it is called Grihadevi. It is a deep, dark well of bondage. But
spiritual association in order to have this attitude in our life.
The master life is not simply meant to do good. To do good is something real. We have to actually make sacrifices together as a family for self-realization, for seva. Then, our family, when it is based on the principle of Bhagavad Dharma, it becomes like a boat that carries us across the social materials.
Yes, sir. Bhakti is the relation between Jivatma and Paramatma. On the same mind can be correct that sannyasi or saints, they are a link between the Rasti and the Lord.
That is the proper responsibility. Service that a sannyasi is supposed to offer to human society. And if he is not offering that service by his good conduct and by his proper representation of the way of God in his life and in his words, then he actually should not be in that ashram. He's not a sannyasi at all. Sannyasi doesn't mean sacrament. Sannyasi doesn't mean shaved head or magic hair. Sannyasi means a quality of life of sacrificing everything in the service of God and the upliftment of human society.
Saint can be Grihastha or Saint can be a Sannyasi.
Saint is one who's dedicated his life in constant language.
One person talked.
Yes.
What Krishna says, Atisavakvajit, why it says? Why does he test his devotees too much?
Excess. Why do you test? You are a school teacher? But you are connected with the university. Why do the professors of the universities test their students? They only become strong if they study and work hard and prepare themselves. What happens if they don't study to prepare themselves when the test comes? Do they become strong? They become failures.
Correct? But the teacher is willing to take that risk of having certain students fail because they know that those who are sincere.
So that they should be able to face even hardship in life.
If they prepare themselves, if you prepare yourselves, you pass the test. And if you're sincere, if you fail a test, then you become that much more determined to prepare yourself to pass the next one. So it makes you strong. So in the same way, Krishna tests his devotees to screen them. Those who are insincere will fall from the path. Those who are sincere, they will become stronger and stronger and stronger in the faith of these tests. Now, why Krishna gives excess? If that devotee is sincere, he doesn't accept any excess for himself, but he uses it for the glorification of God. He uses it in the service of humanity. The spiritual principles.
And if you're willing to do that, that is detachment. You'll be light on it. Whatever Krishna gives you, don't accept anything beyond the basic necessities for yourself. Use the rest for the upliftment of human society and for the glory of Krishna. If you're willing to do that, then the more Krishna gives you, the more service you can render, the more good you can do in the world. But if you accept it for your own personal pleasures or your own selfish desires, then you fall. Yam Narathatha Yumpakalpate Narathasya Dharamakantasya Kamalabhyayasya. Srimad Bhagavatam says that when you're engaging in devotional service, then Krishna will reciprocate with your good seva by giving you more and more and more and more to use. If you think that that is meant for your sense gratification, then you lose your bhakti. But if you use more and more and more, you give more and more and more for Krishna's service, then you become more glorious. And your bhakti grows within your offering.
Even when one has surrendered everything, then where's the need of
this? The question is, have you surrendered everything? If you've surrendered everything, then whatever Krishna does is not even a test anymore. If you're still seeing it as a test, it means you haven't surrendered everything. Surrender everything is to surrender your ego, ahankar. When you surrender your ego, then you realize nothing is mine. Not know it, but realize that nothing is mine. Then there's no question of test. Whatever Krishna gives you, you know it's his. There's not even the slightest inclination. But as long as there's that tinge of ego, ahankar, then there must be tests. Krishna provides those tests so that we can, through those tests, we can purify and ultimately transcend it. And then we can say, you surrender everything. If she was not tortured, you would never have heard of her. If she was not tortured, you would never have heard her name today. Do you understand? Why do you know about Mirabai? Because she was tortured. No one would even have taken her songs seriously if she didn't go through all those tortures. Through those tortures, Krishna showed the world what a great devotee she was. And therefore we take her life and her songs very seriously. Krishna didn't torture her as a test. Krishna didn't torture the Pandavas as a test. Krishna didn't torture Prahlad as a test. Krishna put them through those situations to show the world the glory of his devotees, so that they would be immortal minds, and their example will eternally be followed by all sincere seekers of truth. So for the unsurrendered souls, the tests are for our purification. And for the surrendered souls, the tests are for our glorification. Krishna loves to glorify his . If Prahlad, if Hiranyakashipu was a nice, gentle, God-conscious father, would you have heard of Prahlad today, so many millions of years later? because to the degree Hiranyakashipu is a rakshasa, asura, to that degree we appreciate the glories of the Lord. If Duryodhana was a gentleman and told the Pandavas, let's divide the kingdom fairly, would you have heard of Arjuna and understood to his faith? There would be nothing to read about. The whole Mahabharata is an exciting, suspenseful story of all the tortures and all the mistreatment of the Pandavas and how they remained perfectly faithful to Krishna through all of it.
What are your comments about the most of the persons? What are your comments, what are your views about the things, some of the people they can fast for certain days, fixed days. They will do certain things on a certain particular day. Is there any use of all these things?
Yes.
Will it not destroy your virility otherwise?
Yes.
We knew that way and we changed the spirit. Very hard to disturb our daily routines. Because generally our daily routines are very materialistic and ordinary by nature.
Therefore, certain days like Ekadasi, Janmashtami, Ramnavami, these days are especially fast days, and the purpose of these fast days is to perform some sacrifice for the purification of our consciousness. And of course, on those fast days, we are meant especially to reduce the energy that we put in maintaining this body, to utilize that same time and energy to perform sadhana. We should not only just stop eating, but on fast days we should increase how much we read the scripture. We should increase how much we do seva. We should increase how much we chant the name of God. Fast days are meant for special sacrificial offerings of our own life for the purification of our hearts and the service of God. And the great acharyas and the scriptures, they strongly recommend that it is essential that we regularly keep these holy days according to these traditions.
And shouldn't that same thing be followed on other devotees? I think it would be better if the same thing they are followed on some other devotees. Suppose we say we just took a pause, and you just say that you are sacrificing. Okay, then shouldn't we just eat less daily? And we should keep the pause at that particular time.
That is also recommended. Vishnu says that this path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or sleeps too little. This is something that is to be done every day. But you see, when we have regular fast days, this keeps that awareness alive in our hearts. When we keep regular fast days, this actually keeps a check by which we are conscious that every day we should be making sacrifices, and we should be taking less for ourselves and giving more of the energy of God's service. What is the purpose? The purpose of a fast day is not to fast. The purpose of a fast day is to detach our minds from material enjoyment and attach our minds to Krishna and Krishna's service. And that fast day is meant to actually give us strength and clarity of vision for all the days that follow. It is not simply a ritual. It is an important stepping stone to a higher realization of life.
Bhagavatam. According to the teachings of the Vajrayana, it was extracted the essence of all the Vedic scriptures. The simplest and most direct form of purification in this age of Kali Yuga is the congregation of chanting. There are three types of Nam Kirtan. One is japa, in which individually, in the seclusion of our own hearts, we softly chant the holy names and mantras. Another is bhajan, where we sit together with a few others. Sometimes even we sit alone and we sing beautiful prayers. The prayers of the pure devotion written by previous great acharyas for the chanting of God's name. And the other is kirtan, where a large body of devotees come together very sincerely, very attentively.